Welcome to a new season of Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily Taylor. I'm a mediator, developmental psychologist, conflict resolution teacher, and mom of five. And just like you, I've had my fair share of conflict. Over time, I've realized conflict isn't something to fear. It's simply part of life. What matters is how we respond, and if we have the tools to handle it with confidence and care. And that's what this podcast is all about. In each episode, you'll hear me coach someone through a real conflict they're facing. You'll listen as they share their story, and I'll guide them towards solutions that align with their goals and values. Along the way, I'll point out skills and strategies you can use in your own life, whether at work, at home, or in your other relationships. So whether you've been with us since season one or you're brand new, welcome. I'm glad you're here. Let's jump in. It's a new year, and we're all thinking about making changes. So today, I thought I'd help you make a plan for managing conflict better in 2026. I've chosen five go-to skills that are sure to boost your confidence in any conflict. And along the way, I'll share moments from the first two seasons of Conflict Coach to help illustrate them. First is knowing when to stop focusing on the conflict itself and focus instead on the relationship. I know that sounds counterintuitive, because when we're in a conflict, it's the friction that feels most pressing. But there's a moment from season one, episode five, that illustrates this so well. Tyler is a young married guy sharing a home with his sister who's also recently married. So these two couples are having typical roommate conflicts around cleanliness and sharing common areas. That's what Tyler has come to the session looking to resolve. But as we talk, he realizes his relationship with his sister needs tending to first. Let's listen. If you had a good relationship with your sister, what would that look like?
I would hope that we would be able to talk about hard things better without blowing up or shutting down.
So that's been the pattern that you've known, either pulling away or just having a kind of a blow up.
Right.
What would help her feel comfortable just talking with you?
I think she has a very big fear of being judged. And so maybe knowing that, one, I'm not judging her, but two, other people wouldn't be privy to the conversation.
Okay, so there's some privacy involved, that
yeah.
It's just you and her.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most natural setting, not just for her, but for you, where you could create safety for both people?
Yeah, I definitely prefer sitting. Food is always nice. Yeah, maybe out to lunch somewhere, but then that gets tricky because there are people around, right? So I know for me, I don't mind talking in a public setting. For her, it might be different. I'm not really sure.
When's the last time that you and her had that kind of opportunity?
I'd say maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
I want to just settle on that point just for a minute. Can you imagine if you had to have a conversation, say, with your spouse, and it had been 2 or 3 years since you had talked about anything real? That's a long time.
It's a long time.
I think we just struck on something kind of interesting. A lot of times we're thrown into situations where everybody's all together and there's kind of a group issue. But even in just talking with you, Tyler, it seems like there is the household stuff. But this is sibling stuff. This is a sibling relationship that's important to you. And again, we're super busy. We have these other family relationships that are really important. And just the time and place input into that relationship, the inputs may not be there, right? Like there's this desired outcome of intimacy and familiarity and ability to talk with a feeling of safety. But it's just been a long time since she's been just with you.
That makes sense. Yeah.
What would it take to be rekindled in your sibling relationship with her?
Yeah, I think a big thing is being able to set time aside for that. You know, it's a lot harder. I think a lot of times we talk about that with your spouse, right? This idea of like once a week date nights with your spouse, or you know, making sure that you're being authentic with them. And we don't talk about that with siblings a lot.
I bring it up just the other night, my brother was driving home from work and he spontaneously called me. And when he called me, we talked like friends. Like he was telling me, like we were joking and laughing, and it wasn't like a conference call. I don't know. Sometimes a family situation feels like it's kind of like a conference call and you don't have true intimacy with anyone that you're talking to. It's just like the family as a collective unit. Yeah. And again, I don't know if that's how it feels to you, but it was interesting because that feeling just stood out. It was like, I want a personal relationship with him. I want him to be not just this role of a brother. I want him as a friend. Can you, like, in imagining, you know, your life right now, as busy as it is, what's a way to, again, start that friendship?
Probably just pulling her aside, right? Being like, hey, are you free to do lunch? Just us. Or, hey, you want to go on a walk? Just us.
What do you think she would say?
I think she'd be okay with that.
All right, friends. I love how we heard Tyler recognizing in real time that he'd been neglecting his relationship with his sister, and rebuilding that closeness could create better conditions for resolving their conflict around household chores. As you experience conflicts this year, I encourage you to assess your relationship with the other person, whether it's a partner, a friend, a family member, a coworker, or a neighbor. You'll be amazed how often there's some work to be done there. Ask yourself, are we as close as we once were? What can I do to help them feel loved or appreciated or understood? Would a friendly walk or a lunch date help us to reconnect? Focus your energy on that for a bit and see if it doesn't open up new ways to resolve the conflict with less anger and more desire to collaborate. Okay, the next skill I want to highlight comes up in season 1, episode 8, where I'm coaching Morgan. She'd recently been cut off by her sister after some things were said in a family group text that caused offense. Morgan is struggling to figure out how to mend the relationship when her sister won't even take her calls. As we talk, she learns how important it is to approach relational repair in smaller steps, rather than trying to fix it all in one big conversation or confrontation. I've heard you mention 2 times now that a letter might be a good idea, that it might not seem as manipulative or like forcing a repair or forcing a confrontation.
Yeah, a gentle invitation to maybe open up her eyes to what she's assuming may not be as accurate. Because it seems like she's assuming that I'm not willing to learn or to listen or to change. And so it would just be taking a shot in the dark and guessing what she's assuming and see if I can correct anything.
Okay. I'm going to be maybe a little more blunt.
Go for it. I'm obviously missing something.
No. I figure I can do this because you've been pretty upfront and you like conversations. If you go to her explaining your reasons why you didn't support her, how do you think she'll react?
Yeah, that's not the best approach. I was thinking more of saying, hey, I'm really hurt. I would like to learn about how to support you better. And when you're ready, have a conversation about what happened. I want you to know, like, I miss you. And despite how hard it is, I'm willing to wait longer if you need more time. But yeah, maybe that is what I'm going to do. I don't know.
How does that feel when you're saying those things? Does that seem like something you would do?
I'd be willing to listen, and then I'd ask. And then I'd kind of see, like, are you just needing to know I'm here for you and see if that helps? But if it turns into a conversation where you need to do X or this isn't going to be okay, then I'll be like, we can talk about it more, but I can't do X.
I think what you're striking at is almost any conflict we go into. I don't know if you're familiar with positions and interests. A position is the thing you're going to do to meet your needs. An interest is the value, belief, or the need that's driving the action. Does that mean it's your why? I hear your why, and you correct me if I'm wrong. I hear your why is I love myself and I love you. If that's clear, I love myself and I love you, then you're going to be able to brainstorm the how.
too often we put our conflicts as if I can do this or I can do this. I can either support her or I can like put myself down, right? But the best decisions are I can do this and this because you love yourself and you love her. And then once that's set, then moving into the next step is how do I think she will feel my love? Like all the research on estrangement shows that continuing acceptance and warmth, that's kind of what feeds people wanting to come back to relationships. So then the how is, what do I think will actually work? What do I actually think will thaw the cold between us so that she feels my love, right? That's the main question. This is not one conversation. This is not one letter. There's going to be a series of repair because it's been a pretty big breach and there's no expectation that that quickly goes away. But if the first step is, how can I help this person feel my love? That's a very different approach than how can I help this person understand why I was justified just like they were justified. That's a very different framing to a first step in repair. So I would just suggest to think about that question of what's the first step to thaw and help that person feel my love? Does Seems anything like, come to mind or is that?
I mean, the first thing is just to talk about like, I miss you and I'm sorry you're hurting. End of sentence.
I think you just said it. That's the beginning of the desire to reconnect, right? We want what we had, like we want to go back and like put it back to what it was. But with the rift, it's going to have to be broken up into smaller steps. But you identifying like this is clearly a relationship that matters to you. The fact that you've chosen to talk about it with me, right? If I care that much, I care to do it in a way that's actually effective and not just self-justifying. Because if you do the self-justifying route, especially if you start on that route, you're pretty likely to not get a thaw.
So what I'm thinking is after like, I miss you, I'm sorry you're hurting. The next thought is, I want to learn more about how you want to be loved, how it looks like loving you, how to help you feel that I love you. And just saying like, I accept how you're feeling. I can accept that and I can hold it. And there's space with me to just hold that independent of how I feel about it.
So listeners, I know it seems obvious that healing big rifts doesn't happen overnight. And yet we often act like we expect that one big conversation where we get it all out on the table and speak our minds will solve everything. In my experience, an incremental approach works much better. One small gesture of care or trust-building encounter after another can bring us to a place where repair can start. And that's exactly how things went for Morgan. The day after our coaching session, she sent a gift basket through Amazon to her sister with a note that just said, "Hey, I miss you." And her sister called immediately and they had a great chat. After months of not being in contact, they're back in communication. Little by little, they built on that to clear up some of the hurt and disagreement that led to the estrangement. Morgan even says their friendship is actually better now than it was before. Patiently taking small steps to repair a relationship is a fundamental skill in conflict with people who matter most in your life. Next, I want to expand on a skill I briefly mentioned in that conversation with Morgan, how to identify your why in a conflict and why that's so important. Listen to this skill play out in the first episode of this new season of Conflict Coach. Stacy is with me and she's recently lost her sister to suicide. Stacy's sister had mental health struggles for a long time. And now Stacy's in a tense conflict with her late sister's husband and son, driven partly by how things went before the suicide. Things have gotten pretty ugly and Stacy's at a loss for what to do next.
I really truly, and I know people throw this term around a lot, but he truly is a narcissist. And I say that because he only cares about himself. He really does. I know when my sister was in the care facility, she asked me specifically to talk to him about some things that she needed or she needed him to do. And I was very polite telling him that these are the things that she needed. And when I talked to her again, I said, I talked to him. Do you need me to talk to him again? And she said, no, he felt personally attacked. Instead of taking responsibility for those things that she said she really needed, he just felt personally attacked.
Okay. So you've been in the middle of trying to help your sister, trying to help her get her needs met.
Mm-hmm.
And seems like there was a lack of responsiveness. Something I was thinking about too as you're talking is sometimes we have like the immediate incident, but there were things leading up to it. So it sounds like your love and care for your sister was behind, you know, somewhat this reaction, even though you are treated rudely. Yeah. Is it more about how he treats your sister?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think she's just at her tipping point, obviously. And I know she'd had the conversation with him multiple times before, and I don't know what those conversations were, but I think things would get better for a minute, and then they would just go back to how they were.
Do you want to have a relationship with your brother-in-law?
No. No. Both me and my brother have both said we never want to speak with them again. Ever. Well, I take that back.
Okay.
We both want to tell him what we believe are our truths, how he treated our sister. But my nephew has asked us not to because he's still the one that's stuck in the middle, I guess you should say, because it's my sister's son. And he actually is her son from her first marriage.
Okay, friends. This was a critical moment in the conversation with Stacy. We always have to do what I call emptying the closet to get all the facts on the table before we start trying to address the conflict. And in this case, we finally landed on Stacy's primary concern. She wants a relationship with her sister's son, but not necessarily with her brother-in-law. It can be very easy to start trying to resolve our conflicts before we truly know what our core issue or motivation our why is in the conflict. Spend some time thinking deeply about what is really bothering you about the conflict you find yourself in. Talk it over with a trusted friend or family members to hear their outsider perspectives on what's going on. Once you know your why, you can go about solving your conflict much more effectively. I hope you're already getting some ideas for leveling up your conflict ability in 2026. Next, I want to highlight a skill I cover in pretty much every coaching session. You've heard it several times this season already. It's role playing, and specifically, role playing from the other person's point of view. Laura from episode 3 of this current season did a really great job at this. Her conflict is with a coworker named Hope, who's recently taken on some of the duties Laura's been doing for years. But the transition isn't going well. People keep coming to Laura instead of Hope, the new hire. It's gotten to the point that Hope is complaining about Laura to their boss and working remotely to avoid being around her. Laura feels like Hope is being unfair, so I suggest that Laura pretend she's Hope and imagine what she'd say about the conflict. So what we're trying to do when I have you role play as if you were the other person you're in a conflict with is to try to see if there's anything we can discover about what she might need or want that hasn't been super clear to you.
Okay.
Okay?
So we'll just start the conversation. Okay. Hope, sounds like there's been some tension. What are the things that are bugging you right now?
I'm frustrated that I got hired for a role and they're using Laura as the resource instead of coming to me. I'm afraid that it's going to look bad for the job that I'm doing if they continue to go to someone else.
Okay. I know you're frustrated and kind of worried about your job. What have the tensions really been with Laura? Like, what are you concerned about there?
I'm concerned that she's connecting and has a different rapport with people than I've been able to figure out. I'm concerned that I'm going to have to fill the role in the same way that she did by being in person and engaging with people in the way that she did. And I do my best work by myself or remote versus in person.
If things were going well at work, what would it look like for you?
I would be working remote most days of the week. I would be in office only for the important meetings. And people would reach out to me with their problems via ticket and respond as I responded to them. And I wouldn't have to focus on multiple forms of communication.
What are you willing to do to kind of work on these issues?
That's a hard question. So I'm just going to side note back to myself for a minute. I don't have an answer for that one because I feel like her instinct is to just avoid them and say, I've done my part and I can't do anything else. And I can't. I don't,
well, yes, that's maybe the that's the question, right? Yes. You are amazing, by the way.
Oh,
I'm like,
you.
I don't know if you do acting or whatever, but
no.
Anything stand out to you while you were talking as if you were Hope?
I do think I kind of gained some empathy for that transition. Like I said, I've been at the company for a long time. So for a little bit, I think I may have lost my empathy in how hard it is to transition from other roles that have so much structure and so much expectation of like, this is your to-do list, do it in this box and don't waver. Because I've been here for, you know, 6+ years, it feels really easy to just be like, oh, this is the way it works here. And so that was one thing that stuck out to me is maybe I need to give her a little, and I don't know that I'm not giving her grace, but maybe she feels like I'm not giving her grace to adjust.
Well, friends, it really was remarkable how fluidly Laura was able to respond to my questions as her coworker Hope. Usually people struggle and stumble a lot more. But I'm telling you that the role playing like this almost always leads to a breakthrough where we discover something that hadn't been obvious about the other person's needs and motivations. It only took channeling Hope's voice for a few minutes to help Laura to realize, oh, maybe some of this is Hope's own insecurity and learning curve, and it's not about me personally. Once she could see that, Laura's thinking about how to resolve the conflict went in a completely different direction. You'll have to listen back to episode 3 to hear how that played out. So please take some time to role play as the other person in your conflict. Get your partner or a trusted friend to help, or just do it alone in front of a mirror. You can even do it in writing. The goal isn't to be completely accurate about how the other person would respond. It's to discover things that are easy to miss when you're seeing the conflict only through your own eyes. Okay. I've got one more fundamental skill I'd like you to consider. I cover this one in episode 6 of the current season while coaching Spencer. He's feeling stuck in a job without the opportunities for advancement he expected. There have been some clashes with managers and HR. As we talk about it, it becomes clear he's probably going to leave the current job, but he's worried about how he'll avoid repeating the same mistakes next time. That's where our final skill of the day comes in. Creating a positive narrative to integrate what you'll learn from a conflict. Let's listen.
What are you bringing with you that you didn't have before you worked for this company? Because it sounds like you have gained some things.
I have.
There's been good and bad. But what are the things you're going to bring with you to the next place?
A much stronger understanding of what my strengths are. It's very helpful to be in a physical environment. It's very helpful to be in an environment where I'm walking around, where I'm talking with all sorts of people. I do enjoy the customer interface.
And you've enjoyed that. I can see from your face.
I've really,
you're smiling. You're you like this about yourself.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And there was this time we had a customer who unfortunately made inappropriate comments about one of my coworkers like a couple weeks ago. And my manager was like, hey, if he shows up again, we need to let him know that he's not welcome here and like we're refusing his service. And so he shows up. And everyone, obviously, they came to me like, hey, the guy's here. And I was so excited to, like, go talk to this guy and, like, use all my communication skills. And I've learned about myself that sitting down with someone, having a discussion, I can do that anytime. So I don't know what job that is.
But well, that, I think, though, narrowing down the things that are, like, really important, it's more like a principle.
Yeah.
You're like, I want to be compensated and have a role.
Yes.
That acknowledges this part of me, right?
Yes. Instead of me just being like an associate who happens to be good at these things,
yes.
I want those things to be my role.
Yes. What are you going to look for in a manager?
I think I can look back to previous people who have supervised me and be able to identify traits in those people that have like worked. And like looking at the past like 3 supervisors I've had that have worked, they want me to craft the role. The thing that's been missing from those, however, is an applied structure. And that's why, like, while I've
enjoyed my time in those previous like jobs and internships and stuff. I was just needing more structure because it was difficult for like my ADHD and stuff.
Okay.
And I think that's why I kind of like maybe went to the other side of the pendulum a bit with this job a little bit.
The reality was a lot of structure, but not very much freedom to be creative.
It was like structure in all the unhelpful ways.
Okay. What you're getting at is brilliant, is like you take your previous experiences, and that's like creating a real narrative. It's like, it's not just this one job. It's like all this stuff collectively. Mm-hmm. I need to, you know, have people believe in me, have ideas that matter. But I really need structure, but structure that enhances my ability to be creative and be independent. But it sounds like you know yourself a lot better now after this year and a half than you did before. And that's, again, a narrative of progress is weaving these things together.
Yeah, I love that.
All right, listeners. So you heard me guiding Spencer to reframe the things that went wrong at his job into a list of things he wants and needs in his next job. Creating a positive narrative of past mistakes or conflicts is really a skill of flipping the negative to positive. So instead of saying, my ideas were ignored, Spencer would say, I want to work somewhere where my contributions are valued. It may seem like semantics, but the power of creating a positive narrative is that it helps you stay future-focused and moving toward the life and relationships you want. Decide what you'll actively do, not just what you'll avoid. Make sure these actions align with your long-term goals and values to better ensure your success and satisfaction. I hope you've enjoyed this special Level Up for the New Year episode of Conflict Coach. These five skills will make a world of difference in all of the conflicts you face this year. Knowing when to focus on the relationship rather than the conflict. Taking smaller steps to repair relationships. Finding your why in a conflict. Role-playing from the other person's point of view. And creating a positive narrative of conflict failures. I'll put links to all the episodes we touched on in today's show notes. And reach out to me on social media if you have any questions. I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily. Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily Taylor is a BYU radio podcast. If you or someone you know has a conflict you'd like to discuss on the show, email conflictcoach@byu.edu. And next time, I'll be coaching Maya, who's been estranged from her grandparents all of her life, but would like to change that. I hope you'll join me.